Welcome to Discovering Spirit Within. This is Reverend Deborah Phillips coming to you from Spiritual Life Center in Sacramento, California. And today I'm talking about words without meaning. I tried to find a humorous title and that eluded me, so maybe we'll have a few laughs during this conversation. We all know what buzzwords are. They're words that become so popular and they're used so much that honestly, they don't mean anything anymore. And they can be kind of annoying. They can also be kind of funny. But when it comes to doing your spiritual work, it's pretty important to understand what you are saying and to be aware of how you're using your words. This is important because the way you use your words, what you say, and what you think are what create your reality. So it's really important to be aware of what you are saying and aware of what you mean. Now, this can be taken to an extreme where a person becomes afraid to say anything because they're going to say something and it's going to manifest in their lives and they're going to ruin their lives. Well, fortunately, we live in time, which means things take time to manifest. So I can say something and it might not be quite the right thing. And I can go, oh, I didn't mean that. If I say something sort of, I'm going to use the word wrong, I don't have to worry about it just popping up in front of me immediately. I have some space there. I have some time. In that respect, time is our friend. But if you have something that you say that is negative or not necessarily the highest consciousness, over and over and over again, you are going to create that in your life one way or another. So today is simply an exercise in thinking about what some of the words that you use and what they mean to you, and are you meaning them the way you mean to mean them? Today, I am sharing with you the top five words that I think are either misused, overused, or possibly just annoy me a little bit. Okay, number five. Number five is trigger. I'm getting to the point where the word trigger triggers me a little bit. It's a really useful word when we're trying to explain why we're upset about something or something makes us uncomfortable. But now I'm hearing everybody say, well, that triggered me and I'm triggered and I'm okay. You might feel uncomfortable, but what is an actual trigger as opposed to just a discomfort? Now, that might sound like splitting hairs, but I don't think it is. Because when I use the word trigger, I'm talking about something big. I'm talking about something that I have to work out with another person, or I need to talk out somehow. Something that's just kind of annoying that I really didn't appreciate or is making me uncomfortable isn't a trigger for me, and this is why. A trigger in my world is something that not only makes me uncomfortable, but brings up other stuff from other experiences, or maybe it touches something from my childhood or, you know, my family. In other words, for me, a trigger is something that sets a whole set of emotions, experiences, feelings in motion. And by the very nature, of course, they are probably not particularly positive. Otherwise, we wouldn't call it a trigger. And think about this. We almost never say that something triggered me into joy. We always talk about the trigger being something negative, something that upset us. So the question would be, is when you want to use this word trigger, has something really upset you and started an internal turmoil? Or are you merely annoyed or unhappy about something? To me, there's a huge difference. And it's probably an important distinction to make. Because as I'm sitting here talking about this, I'm realizing that when I'm saying the word trigger, I'm not just saying it to the other person, I'm saying it to myself. So in one respect, I'm telling myself I'm triggered when I really am not. And see what kind of awareness can come out of that. It's like something happens and you want to say, well, that triggered me. And then you stop and well, wait a minute. Is this really a trigger or is this just sort of annoying? And do I need to make a big deal out of it? Because the word trigger carries drama with it. So when you start to use this word, if you're one who does, think about what it means to you, what circumstances you're using it in, and how much drama you want to put into the situation. So that covers trigger. Number four is the word spiritual. Oh my, this is a podcast about spirituality, and here I am saying that the word spiritual is overused. It is overused and it is misused so much that I just had to put it on my list. Listen to the dictionary meaning of spiritual. Relating to or affecting the human spirit or soul as opposed to material or physical things. That's it. It's simple. But we use the word in many ways. It's like, well, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. I get that. That makes complete sense to me because a lot of people, especially some younger generations, are very much into being connected with their inner divinity as opposed to going to church and engaging in a formal religion. And that's great. Where this word gets overused and misused is what is considered spiritual. And actually, the way it is misused the most is when someone does something that isn't necessarily super wonderfully good, someone else will say, well, that's not very spiritual. And I make fun of it. It's like, that's spiritual. We're going to be spiritual today. Okay? Spirituality is an inner relationship with yourself, with one source, with the creative energy that makes up this world. And in many respects, of course, when you get on a spiritual path, it can become a way of life. But the minute you start labeling something spiritual or not spiritual, you put it in a box and you limit it. And it also becomes just another label for people. That person's spiritual, that person's not spiritual. And the truth is, we don't really know who's spiritual and who isn't, and it's really none of our business. We need a word to describe the inner relationship that we have with the divine. It's not that it's a bad word. It's when it becomes, like I said, that label, when we start saying what spirituality is and is not. Because everybody has a different relationship with the divine. And someone might think that going to church every Sunday and saying exactly the same prayers by rote and somehow not necessarily having it meaning for them that's still spiritual. And somebody else might spend the afternoon in their woodworking shop building a table, and that might be a spiritual experience for them. So when we use the word spiritual, we need to know, or we need to realize what we mean and what we're saying and why that word is important, because in these conversations that I overhear or I see, you know, written on Facebook or something where people are being judgmental about what's spiritual and what's not, it takes all of the meaning out of it. To me, spiritual is a word that we should use with reverence, that we should use with respect, because how else are we going to describe our relationship with the divine? And yes, I know there's other words to use, but I hope you get my meaning here, is that calling something spiritual only means it's spiritual for you. It doesn't mean it's spiritual for someone else. It doesn't mean that it touches another person deeply inside. And when someone throws out that thing, well, that wasn't very spiritual, whoa. Okay, let's just stop doing that right now. Okay, thank you very much. Number three is the word perfect. Way back in the late 1800s, a lot of people came to this idea of what we now call New Thought. It was a whole movement that just arose, and it was amazing, and it was marvelous. And there was a lot of writing from that time, and of course, it goes into the 1900s, the 1920s, the 1930s, all the way up, of course, until today. But the early writers used the word perfect a great deal to describe how our lives can be when we get on the spiritual path and use metaphysical thinking. And teachers continue to use it today. And that's okay, but the difference is that when the early teachers used the word perfect, they were not talking to a culture steeped in perfectionism, And you may have noticed, at least those of us who live in the United States, live in a culture that just glorifies perfectionism. It grew over a period of time, and I'm sure that television and radio helped. And now that we have social media and all of that, the idea of perfectionism has become really, really, well, almost dangerous. I think it is dangerous, actually. And they talk about teenage girls in particular who experience depression because they look online and they, you know, they see that they don't look like all these Photoshopped people or anything. The word perfect, when we're speaking metaphysically, means that everything is as it should be in this moment. It doesn't necessarily mean that it won't or can't change or doesn't need to change. But right there, here, in this moment, it's perfect, it's okay, it's good. I might not like it, and I may want to change it, and that's also okay, and that's actually perfect. They also meant that the energy behind our lives, the one source, there is perfection there. There is nothing that needs to be changed or improved. And that if we can raise our consciousness to that point, then we will achieve that level of perfection. But it has nothing to do with how we look or how we dress or how much money we have. That idea of perfection has nothing to do with our material lives. It has to do with our relationship with the divine. And I admit that I don't use the word perfect in my prayers. I don't use it in my talks. I don't use it unless I'm explaining it, because this idea of being perfect has become such a difficult idea, at least in the culture I live in. And I can probably make a safe assumption that any place that has access to the internet is going to be having some of these same concerns about the idea of being perfect. Even the most mature of us is impressionable. And we see something and we go, that's kind of cool. Maybe I could do that, or maybe I could be like that. And part of spiritual maturity is realizing that each of us is a unique, amazing expression of the divine, and that while we may need to improve our relationship with the material world, in so many ways, internally, we are perfect. We are who we came here to be, and really our job here is to become more of who we came here to be and to refine ourselves. And we refine ourselves by growing in consciousness. And it doesn't matter what we look like or how much we weigh or any of those other external things. The perfection that the metaphysical teachers talked about has nothing to do with the external world. Although I will say that in any one moment, you know, okay, it's all perfect. Okay, what can I do to improve it? And I laugh at myself. Number two, the word accept. Now, this is my own very personal, I'm going to say it, trigger word. Because when I hear the word accept, as in we just need to accept that, my brain says, well, that's permanent. If I'm accepting it, I have to keep it. So I choose to use the word acknowledge. Now, why do we use the word accept so much in this teaching? We use the word accept to help people stop fighting a situation. When a circumstance arises, what you do is you say, okay, here it is. I accept what's going on right now, rather than fighting it. That's the basis of that whole thinking. But can you see where if someone is being told to accept it, you're going, but no, I don't want to accept it. I want to fight it. No, don't fight it. Acknowledge that it's there. See it. Talk to it. Be with it. And then figure out how to change it. So for me, acknowledge works better than accept. And that might not be true for anybody, but it's still number two on my personal list. For me, accepting means it's permanent in my brain, and acknowledging means, okay, here we go, and it takes the fight out of it. I just see the situation for what it is, I acknowledge it, and then I start taking steps and going into action to do whatever it is I need to do next. Number one, ego. The word ego is so overused that I don't even know what it means half the time anymore. I have a Thursday group that I facilitated for 7 years. Part of what we did in that group was discuss words and what they meant to us and how we used them. And it was really so much fun to put a word up on the board and then have everybody say how they used it and how it hit them and come up with other words to use for it. And about a year into that group, I went in and I said, let's talk about ego. And so we started talking about it, and I asked them to come up with another word for ego. Not one person could come up with another word for ego. I even continued it into a second week to find out if they could come up with another word for ego. And then that didn't happen, so I made up a nonsense word and replaced it with ego. And sadly, they didn't even think it was funny. From my point of view, there are two reasons why ego doesn't really mean a lot anymore. One of which is A Course in Miracles, which I highly respect and has helped lots of people, uses the word ego so much that by the end of it, it didn't kind of mean anything to me anymore. And the other one is our Western interpretation of Eastern teachings that say that you have to kill the ego. From that perspective, the ego is bad, it is evil. And the truth is we need our ego. The ego is a word that comes out of psychology, and it is the part that moves us around this world. We need the ego. There's another minister at Spiritual Life Center, and she gave a talk one day, and she said that ego is absolutely necessary, and the difference is it in the front seat telling you how to drive, or is it in the back seat? Is it in perspective? Now, I have started replacing the word ego with personality. Now, people who are really into this, the technicalities of things, might argue with this, and I get that. But for explaining it to people and how to work with themselves, it works really well. Because I will go out into the courtyard at church on a Sunday and people will say, well, I was just in my ego at that point and blah, blah, blah. And they're totally discounting themselves. The truth is that we have a personality. We have needs. We have ideas. We have what we think we need to do in the world. And that is driven by a part of us that has been named ego, but it's not necessarily bad. If I didn't have any ego at all, I wouldn't be sitting here doing this podcast. I have to have something that moves me in the material world. Letting it run me, letting that material world need override everything else and try to make me the most important person on the planet is not healthy. That's not good. But it doesn't mean that the ego has to die. It means that the ego needs to be put in perspective. You cannot walk around this planet without some sort of personality or ego. And as I said, I hear people talk about this, and they'll be talking about some conversation they had and how they didn't handle it very well. And then they'll just say, well, I was just in my ego. You were in your need. You are in your need and your self. Maybe you were being selfish, but you weren't being a bad person in that conversation. Your perspective may have been off and your priority may have been off. Your priority was probably more about you than the other person or the situation. And yes, you can call that ego, but the whole idea of killing the ego is, to me, killing your personality. I started to say that that's not what anyone teaches, and I'm sure there are some teachings out there that say that you have to kill your ego, your personality, in order to be spiritual. But when you look at it from the perspective that we are all spirit, we are all the divine, we are each individual expressions of the one source. I always like to think of us as, here we are with this body, and I imagine a prism somewhere off the top of my head. And then the spirit, the light, comes down in through the prism and shines into us, and then it shines out from us. And that is our individual light. That is who we are and who we have come here to be in this world. So we need to be able to function on the earth plane. And we need ego to do that. We need personality to do that. Whatever you call it, we need that to function here. So be kind to yourself and think about when you use the word ego, how you're using it. I mean, a person is egotistical, sure, but what if I said they're selfish and self-involved instead? Isn't that clearer? Because ego is such an overriding, overused, almost meaningless word anymore, that, and it's almost all negative now. That's the other part of it. It's not a negative thing. It is the way we express ourselves in this world. It's a good thing. Love yourself. Be aware of how you're acting. Obviously, you want to be aware of how you're coming across and how you're acting in the world. But don't beat yourself up for having an ego. And think about what the word ego means to you the next time you start to use it, and think of a different word to use for it. In all of these, in my list of five here, think about what other word you can use in place of trigger, spiritual, perfect, accept, and ego. Do an experiment this week. Replace those words with other words and see what happens for you. It'll be really interesting to see how your perspective changes and how you feel about it and whether you feel better about yourself and your world. I wish you a wonderful, beautiful week of clear thinking and clear communication. Thank you for listening today. Discovering Spirit Within is produced by Spiritual Life Center. If you enjoyed our discussion and feel inspired to support us, you can go to slcworld.org/donate. And now, until we meet again, deep peace of the running wave to you, deep peace of the flowing air to you, deep peace of the quiet earth to you, deep peace of the shining stars to you, deep peace of the son and daughter of peace to you. And may the joys of the world go with you.